Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Adam White is a Friday specialist. He loves it. Can't get enough. Has cups of tea. But three cups of tea on a Friday, I reckon, I've seen the last couple of weeks. He's really engaging in the leaf industry. Whitey, good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Why is Friday more
not.
It is. You disappear and you have cups of tea.
No, but there is one in front of me at the moment.
I reckon there'll be another couple by the end of the show.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. $1.20 chance.
What's happening in your world, Whitey?
Not much.
Not much?
Not much. I'm waking up this morning very happy that I'm not a St Kilda fan, to be honest.
Yeah, me too.
That was quite a shock last night, particularly considering the start. I mean, St Kilda led at quarter time, and even just watching Damien Hardwick in the box and just the way the game was unfolding, Richmond didn't feel like Richmond was on its game early. And then it just changed. And it changed really, really quickly.
Really, really, really quickly.
Yeah. And it's now 2.5 games in the last three that St Kilda have been really poor. So if you isolate that half against West Coast, where they played excellent in the second half, it can't be forgotten that they trailed by 5.5 goals early in the third quarter in that game last week against West Coast. And when you couple that up against very heavy losses against Essendon and then again last night against Richmond, the obvious question is, how has this happened?
Well, one man who'll know how that happens is Adam Ramanatskas. He's a former Bombers champion premiership player, if you don't mind, and these days manager to the Stars, and a bit to talk about from that end as well. Rama, good morning to you.
Yes, good morning. I'd like to go back to your opener.
What did my opener say?
Well, there was a little bit of, the voice was cracking.
Yeah, just a bit of something
sort
different.
Sort of a bit of back to your teenage years.
Just threw it out there.
Yeah. Just couldn't really get...
Toss it up.
Get it to the level that you wanted to.
Well, it's one of those things. Sometimes you can't control the magic. It just sort of happens.
Well, maybe the vocal cords are just... they're a little bit stressed at the minute.
Maybe
the cup of tea is that Whitey drinks. Maybe just some hot water.
I've got a theory that the John Bowden coffee might have taken its toll there.
Oh, right.
He's the principal coffee maker around here, which you well know.
Yes.
I reckon there might have been something in the coffee.
Well, a lot of love goes into that coffee.
Oh, I know there does.
There's no doubt about that.
He makes it every morning for me, and he's a great man. Not only the voice of news in Australia, but the best coffee maker in the business. I reckon there might have been an issue with that coffee.
And look, we'll get into it as the morning progresses, but very worrying signs for St Kilda. The most worrying, I think, Whitey, right now, after five rounds, is their percentage. It's 71.
Well, therein lies a huge problem.
And particularly if they're going to be at, you know, that 7 to 10, 12 now. They're nowhere near that at the minute. But if that's what they're competing for at the end of the season, having a percentage of 71 is a long way to get to come back.
Can you determine, either of you, can you determine what has happened with St Kilda as to why we're seeing this? I mean, it's not losing. It's being belted.
Oh.
Well, you've got a theory, Rama. Yeah. You were talking about this in the pre-show meeting, which was a very engaging meeting, by the way.
It was very engaging.
As you answer that, just remembering that they've got Port Adelaide in Adelaide next week, St Kilda.
Then the Mighty Hawks.
My feeling right now is St Kilda have got a mentality of, you do it, then give it to me so I can look good on the end of something. So my belief right now is they don't want to get their hands dirty. And that was evident last night. At a number of contests, you saw players leaving that contest way too early. So you had one St Kilda player, four or five Richmond players, and then on the outer circle, you probably had three or four St Kilda players that had left the contest before the ball had been decided because they wanted to get on the end of it and they wanted to look good.
So how does this happen? How do they go? And because it was identified going into the West Coast game that they had to lift this issue because Brad Crouch, we had him speaking about it. It was a real theme, a focus. It kind of didn't happen early, and then obviously they got it going late. But
see, sometimes you believe in your own hype. Now, we spoke a lot about, in the preseason last year, St Kilda, and this running team that they were, how good they were at running and gunning and using the football. But to use the football and to run, you got to win the football. And when the ball's in motion, so it goes from contest to contest to contest, who's winning those contests? If you're outnumbered at the contest half, as you know, as a coach, it's very hard to control the ball. Very hard.
Yep. Absolutely. And Richmond are the best at outnumbering. Yeah. And if you can't compete with that, if you're not prepared to work your backside off and get your hands dirty, as you rightly say, then it does become a very, very difficult challenge.
So you look at that game last night. So St Kilda have tried to use the marking game against the Tigers last night. Their marks were
109.
So plus 32 they were to Richmond. So they've looked at the Sydney model and gone, okay, we'll try to do that. But sometimes when you mark, you've just got to slow things down. They wanted to play Richmond's game yesterday, and that was continue to have the ball in motion. If the ball's in motion constantly against Richmond, it's very hard to win. You've almost got to bore Richmond.
It's a good term.
You've got to bore them into making a mistake structurally. They're so well. Their system is so good. Well,
that seemed to be the feature last night. That Richmond, we talk often about Richmond behind the ball, but they seemed to be
too good.
Very, they were concentrating.
Yep. Yep. So Max King started really well. Noel Bolter was then able to adjust.
I'll tell you what, there is a point there. And Max kicks those two in the first, was it first quarter.
It might
first
be a
half.
Different game.
I think it does become a different contest. Responsibility of set shots, forwards
That's
kicking
his job.
Set shots, or anyone kicking set shots, but particularly key forwards who it is their job. The responsibility of them to take the opportunities, and against Richmond of all teams, you have to take your opportunities.
The positivity that creates that, for the rest of the team is enormous.
That, you open it up, and they will eat you up, the Tigers. We spoke about this yesterday. It was a great opportunity for the Saints last night. Now, they butchered it, and they haven't come up. They've found wanting. But you get to measure yourself against the best. Richmond will test you in every facet of your game. And they failed last night, no doubt about that. But you've just got to make your opportunities count.
So you look at this, Whitey. Richmond's inside 50s last night, 64. Quarter 1, 13. Quarter 2, 17. Quarter 3, 17. Quarter 4, 17. They're consistent throughout. St Kilda never had a chance where they've slowed the ball. There's not a 10 in there. St Kilda, on the other hand, 33 inside 50s they've had for the game.
That's not winning.
Quarter 1, 13, where they're in the game, competing.
Yep.
Quarter 2, 9. So it's starting to drop.
Taper off.
Quarter 3, 4. 4 inside 50s for a quarter.
I don't think I've come across too many lower than that.
That's commonly known as playing in Richmond's half.
Richmond will walk. So in the third quarter, Richmond are walking through them. They've kicked 7 goals, 6 in the third quarter alone.
So, okay, looking at it from a point of view of, you know, trying to work out how we got to that point, because contested possessions were, Richmond were about plus 20.
Yep.
The clearances, though, were significantly Richmond's way, but particularly centre clearances.
Yeah.
So how much of that is it down to Rowan Marshall giving St Kilda a chance? Because we know at Marvel Stadium particularly that clearances are so important, or is it too simplistic to say they're missing one of their key players?
So 18 to 8 centre clearances in favour of
Richmond. And 8-0 in that third quarter.
8-0 in the third quarter. So, and the one that stood out, without a doubt, was when Marlon Pickett, little Marlon, decided that he was going to hang out with the big boys and won the contest, grabbed it out of the ruck, feeds it to one of their mids, kick it forward, and they kick a goal. And the Brett Ratton, apparently, I didn't see this or hear this at three-quarter time, but apparently on the coverage, spoke about that. In fact, we've got that grab.
Yeah, this is a very good grab.
I'd like to hear this. I haven't heard this, but I've heard about it. Because that was a moment that I was sitting back on my couch going, oh, my God, give me the phone. Let's hear from Brett Ratton.
When you've got a clearance rate like that, and then, all respect to Pickett, rucking, but he's not a ruckman. So we had an advantage that we could have taken in the centre, and we were losing centre bounce clearances probably as much as anything else, and the ball's just going their way. So, yeah, that was very, very disappointing. You know, we miss Marshall tonight, there's no doubt about it, and we miss Ryder. So, Marshall will be back next week, and Paddy might be a week or two away, so we've got to do something about it.
So a reference there from Brett Ratton, post-game. And there's no doubt they are a different team, well, certainly around the contest when Ryder and Marshall are there. So there is that. But
Ryder and Marshall, it's Paw Patrol.
But when you've got Marlon Pickett out there dominating the rucks, it doesn't matter who's out there. I mean, you could take the ruck against Marlon Pickett, Rammer, and still be competitive if you wanted to be. That was a damning moment for St Kilda.
Okay.
Full stop.
So there's one part to put that on the ruckman. There's another part then to put that on the ground level players.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like in that particular incident, it was like they were set up to win the contest.
Yeah.
But you kind of expect that they would win the contest as well. So,
love to hear from Saints fans this morning. 1-300-652-927 with your feedback on last night's loss. Or Tigers fans back on the horse after two losses in a row. Damien Hardwick was talking about playing well and not being too distressed about the performance last week against Port Adelaide because they played pretty well. Let's have a listen to Damien Hardwick on the win last night.
I thought our pressure was very good. You know, we did prep our players at St Kilda's. You know, the quarter and a half they played against West Coast was some of the best footy you've seen played this year. So we knew we were up for a fight. But we know when we play our best, our pressure is high, our system is good, and it looked that way evident early. I thought we gave away a couple of goals in that first quarter we probably shouldn't have. A couple of contested situations behind the ball weren't ideally great, but the guys got better as the game went on. So, you know, some real positives for us tonight.
Lot to like, let's be honest. When you have 34 shots to 13, it's a dominant game.
So Gresham's obviously out for the year.
Yep.
Excuse me. But you look at the two that potentially can come in at some stage. So Zach Jones was a late out last night.
He was.
And then the other one's Dan Hannabury. Now, we're not sure how far Hannabury's away. But those two guys are more at the contest type of players. They stay at the contest until the ball's won, then they make their decision from there. So that's what I just felt last night. It was, there's a lot of Russian roulette from St Kilda.
No, that's a good point.
There was a lot of Russian roulette where I hope he wins. I'm just going to go anyway. So, look, it's fixable. It's definitely fixable for St Kilda. How quick it can be fixed, that's completely up to them. But, you know, two losses now that amount to 160-odd points. One against a team that's probably not going to play finals in Essendon, and another that's probably going to be competing at the pointy end of the season. That's a worry, Whitey.
Yeah, so I think from a point of view of sort of taking a couple of steps back and looking at St Kilda, if based on their draw and based on their injuries, we kind of thought they'd be two and three after five rounds and probably two and four after six rounds. So it's not catastrophic from that perspective, but what has become an issue is two things. One is their percentage, but secondly, it's the way they're playing.
Yeah,
you know, had they lost by 15 or 20 points,
no worries.
And you'd think, you know, no dramas, but it's the way it's happening that has a lot of pressure on St Kilda.
Between the arcs, they're a debacle defensively. Like, well, they cannot defend, and I think it's because of what you say, Raman, that there's a seemingly I want to let somebody else do the work and then we'll get on the end of it. Or it's that system last night, kick mark. And the problem with kick mark, if you don't do it correctly, is once you've got the mark, everyone spreads to different parts of the ground trying to be the next one or the second possession in the chain. And if you turn that next ball over, the whole field is open for the opposition if they're prepared to swarm like Richmond do, and you just get toasted back the other way. So you've got to be really mindful of your kick mark system, because if you do it poorly, any transition, any turnover is basically a goal to the opposition straight away. So there's a couple of problems from my perspective with the Saints. But last night it was the one-way running, and then it was that in between the arcs, the middle of the ground.
Too easy.
It's just too easy to move the footy. Yeah.
Is that because they're slow, or is it just it's an intent thing?
Well, I think they're out of position, getting themselves out of position, getting ahead of the footy, and all that sort of stuff. There's a couple of mechanisms at play there, but it's just one-way traffic at the moment. If they don't keep possession, it's curtains back the other way.
St Kilda are leading at quarter time by a point. It's then 17 goals 11 to 3 goals 2 after quarter time. That's just for a team that wanted to compete or thinks it can compete within the eight, now they go to the second week of the finals.
So Jason Berwick has just sent in a text, and it was next on the topic list was Brad Hill's performance. And it's not just last night. It's been a while now. In fact, it may even be ever since he came to St Kilda. It just hasn't quite worked. He's definitely not the player he was.
So I'll ask you a question on that, Whitey. What do you expect from Brad Hill? What do you think his team and his coaches expect from? Because everyone's going, Brad Hill's this, this and this. You sitting here right now, what do you go, this is Brad Hill, this is what we expect from Brad Hill?
Hard running and the kick inside 50 would be the two things that I think are his features of his game and something that's really important to St Kilda, who I don't think are necessarily highly skilled, that's what he brings to the football team that makes them better.
Half?
Two-way running, link play, finishing.
Yeah. See, I think when Brad is at his very best, it's the two-way running. He gets himself really deep inside his defensive 50, and then that's where he starts his run.
And then he might chain up two or three times in a...
That's
in
right.
That gets his position rate up.
And he goes past his opponent because his opponent can't go with him through those, you know, long 120, 130-metre sprints. That's when Brad Hill's at his best. You're right, the money kick inside forward 50, we've seen that, but it's not starting his run from the middle of the ground where his direct opponent can keep with him. It's starting his run from deep in his defence where his direct opponent definitely can't keep with him.
Can you read that first text? Because I can't really read it and answer it.
Stand by. I will read one that's just come through then.
Yeah.
The last text you made.
About the imagine waking up thing.
Whitey can't imagine waking up supporting St Kilda, and he supports the Bombers. Wowee, that's bad news for Saints, says the press.
So, what I'm saying...
I love the wowee in the middle of it.
What I'm saying to that is that it's more, if you are a St Kilda fan, going into this season, you had high hopes. And after round one, you had even higher hopes after being the Giants in what was a fairly brutal sort of contest. And now, a month later, you're looking at it, and it's the way you're losing. You're thinking, what is going on? This was not meant to happen. That was my point this morning. It's not about comparing against other teams or anything like that. It's expectation was high going into the season. It had got higher as an undermanned team to win on the road in round one. And now look where they're at.
And as you rightly say, the win-loss problem at the moment, or the ratio at the moment, isn't probably dire for the Saints.
Yeah.
But it's how you're playing. It's what's happening to get those losses.
Well, see, sorry, Rama, but that's what Hardwick said last night and during last week when they lost to Port Adelaide. They were saying, well, we didn't win, but I like the way we played.
Yeah.
We played a Richmond way. And so there was a lot of positives to take out of the fact that, yeah, they'd lost two in a row going into that game, but they'd liked what they'd seen.
That's coaching 101 right there. So your team loses, but you're still filling them full of confidence. We play really well, boys. It's there. It's around the corner. And then after the game, Damien Hardwick comes in and says, that's on the back of the Port Adelaide game, why we were able to win so convincingly last night. The other stat that stood out for me, Luz, St Kilda are a territory team. They're a running team. So Richmond have had 36 more disposals, but if you look at the metres gained, they've gained 1,553 more metres.
Right.
There's a lot of sideways action last night, and if you look at Hunter Clark's stats, he had a lot of the footy playing defence. Caulfield had a fair bit of the footy as well. A lot of them were just sort of...
But we're of the belief that St Kilda are a running team.
Yeah.
But they're not a contest team at the moment, and they're not a running team at the moment.
No, that is fair. That is fair from what we've seen in the sample size that we've got in the last couple of weeks for the Saints. 1-300-652-927, have your expectations changed of the Saints? And where do you sit on the Tigers, I suppose? You mentioned the inside 50 kicks from St Kilda.
Oh, Richmond's were beautiful.
Richmond's were good last night. Just going into this week, just interesting data coming through from our man Hoiny.
Ooh.
From Champion Data.
You're getting special emails.
I've got some emails.
Special emails.
I've got some feedback. Wow. Who do you think is the number one team for retaining possession with a kick inside 50 in the competition after four rounds?
I'm going to take a stab here.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, who's leading? I'm going to go Adelaide.
Adelaide. I can tell you.
Can I have a go?
Yes, you can. The Adelaide Crows have improved. I'll get to that shortly, the detail shortly.
Sydney.
Sydney is correct.
Oh.
Ah, yes, got it. Burjo, where are you?
He's stealing Weet-Bix.
Well, I saw Andrew Mays out there with Weet-Bix in a bowl. I think he might be the serial stiller. But we'll get to that shortly. The Sydney Swans have gone from the 17th ranked team in 2020.
Wow.
Kick inside 50 to the number one ranked team. Where'd in 2021. Adelaide have gone from 16 last year to 6. That's
bad.
Good improvement from them. Fremantle have gone from 15th to 2nd. And where's the other big mover? No, that's the biggest of the moves. The other way, the team's going backwards. We've got... The Giants have gone from 3rd to 17th. And Geelong have gone from 1st to 16th. So it's becoming a very important statistic in the world of AFL footy.
Money kick.
The money kick. And who's the greatest money kick of recent times? And I'll give you a bit more of a clue as to where I'm going here. A team that perhaps needs a bit more help in that area and help full stop, really. Who's the best money kick in recent years in
Darren Jarman.
Well, no, not quite that far back.
No, I don't think we're going to
have... He's a friend of ours. He's coming in later on, actually.
Boomer.
Boomer's the best 50 inside 50 money kick player for years.
Don't tell him that.
They could use some help.
No, don't tell him that.
They could use some help on that.
He'd be listening right now.
And he'd be ready to play pre-season draft, mid-season draft.
Well, Kate Simpson's coming back, so we spoke about that Monday. Boomer.
I'm trying to get Kate on. He's not too keen to talk about it. He's not too keen. John's on the road, though. He wants to talk about it. Hello, John.
Hey, fellas. As you know, I don't barrack for them, but I've been watching them. They look like, to me, mate, they're a bunch of players from all other clubs, probably three quarters of them. A lot of them are individual players. I don't want to name them, but pretty hard to get to play as a team, I reckon, St Kilda are. That's my opinion, mate. To gel together, if you have a look at the players, you tell me, I reckon three quarters are from other sides, mate. They're trying to gel together. Are they St Kilda or...
Well, John, last night, St Kilda had 10 players from other clubs playing of their 22.
Now, we've got the data in front of us, I'm sure, but how different would that be to most other clubs going into a game?
How many?
10.
That started elsewhere?
Started elsewhere, yeah.
The first leg of the quaddie tomorrow at Caulfield is race number 6. It is the showdown, Dino. $1 million, 2-year-old affair, up for grabs over the 1,200 metres. And number 2, Starry Legend for Johnny Sadler with Mickey D in the saddle is favourite at tab.com.au. Tough race to win this one, but 330 on the market suggests that he's a pretty big chance.
He's a very smart colt, Daniel. He's had the two starts for two wins, Sandown and Bendigo, both 1,000 metres, both impressive. And I think he's got a bit more in the tank. He's just got to run that strong 1,200. And I'm just thinking it might be a really good race for the Hayes Dabenig stable. They've got the top one, Finance Tycoon, but they've also got a horse called Tramontana, who was put away after a very good run at Sale about 8 or 9 weeks ago, and he's had a trial since then. And I just think he's a big 2-year-old. I think drawn out a little bit of galloping room. I think both starts to date he's been drawn inside, and I think hasn't really been suited. But I think he's drawn out tomorrow, and I think he's got a very good chance, Tramontana. But their other runner, Finance Tycoon, he presents with the best 2-year-old form. We've only got to look at his last run. He ran fourth in the Blue Diamond. That's to Artorias, Ingratiating and Animo. That form just keeps stacking up with Ingratiating Animo placing in the slipper, and then Animo being brilliant in the size produce last week. He too went to the Wodonga trials and trialled nicely. And you know he's going to run a strong 1,200. Starry Legend, as I said, very fast horse. Just got to extend that out to 1,200 metres. And the colts have been better than the fillies all season. But I do think the two fillies from the Godolphin Yard, Arcaded, whose only defeat did come in the Blue Diamond, and I don't know if Barrier 1 really suited her that day, but she's unbeaten other than that. And Sliders was a month between runs going into her last run, and she was way too fresh. I think she could improve sharply inside draw for William Pike. But, I think it's a good race for the colts, and tipping one at a bit of odds.
Now, I must have the wrong form guide, Quinny, because Dino's number one selection here, it says to me it's $18 in the paper at tab.com.au. That can't be right.
Well, it's not, unfortunately. It's trimmed up a little bit since that point in time, from $18 into $16 and $3.80. But I dare say that will be very popular with the RSN family in the coming minutes. Starry Legend, a $3.30 market leader out from $2.80. Arcaded, $3.80. The money has been for the stablemate to Dino's on top selection. And his second pick in the race, Finance Tycoon, who's been $8.50 into $4.80. Dino, there were comments from John Sadler saying that ideally they'd like to have tipped Starry Legend out after the last victory, but had to stick around because this prize money was simply irresistible. Does that play into your thought process at all?
Yeah, a little bit. And I just it shouldn't be relevant, but I remember Sartorial Splendor 2 years ago going into this race for the same stable off a really brilliant 1,000-metre run. And you just realise that the difference between the 1,000 and 1,200 when big money on offer, big field, high pressure, just a different scenario tomorrow. So I think he's got the talent to win. It's just whether he can run the 1,200 metres.
All right, so a little bit of value to start. Rammer, this is a very important recap of numbers for the first leg of the quaddy. Race 6, the showdown, please.
7, 1, 2, 10, 11.
7, 1, 2, 10 and 11, says Dean Lester with the first look at the quaddie. Let's have a look at leg number two. It's the Wynn Victoria Bell Spree Stakes over the 1100. And you mentioned Prince of Sussex before, Dino, the winner of the showdown last year. Well, hasn't got a runner there, Matt Lawrie, but he's got one here. Alpha Oro is the favourite. Dee Stackhouse in the saddle, $4.60 in a fairly solid market here at tab.com.au.
Yeah, this is the stakes race of the day, Daniel. It's not a Super Vobis Gold race as such, and it's a terrific field, and these horses might even progress onto a race like the Sangster for the mares and then the Goodwood in weeks to come. So it's a really important race, and you mentioned Alpha Oro. He's one of my favourites. I just think he's a terrific horse. He's won 6 of 10. He's been in the top 3, 9 of 10, and the one time he missed, he ran 4th, and that was at Group 2 level. So he's a good sprinter. I thought he just raced like he needed the run last start. Not so much fitness, but he came out of the gates just a bit slow for him and it put him out of position. And ultimately, I think that's what cost him winning the race. Sword of Mercy got that beautiful spot behind Sartorial Splendor and won the race. So I think if he's a little bit sharper with that run under his belt and it's 1,100 metres, which I think suits him a bit better, I'm going with Alpha Oro to beat Prophet's Thumb. Was a fantastic win here first up in the Rubiton. Ran well in the Oakley Plate. Ran really well in the Newmarket. She's been freshened up. Jamie Carr back aboard. She seemed to get the really good tune out of her three starts back. 5 Sword of Mercy, as I mentioned, got that beautiful spot at Caulfield, but she just never runs badly. She ran well in the Oakley Plate and then one last start. And Ancestry's a very good sprinter. I like him maybe a little bit better at 1,200 where he can really dictate terms. And he's right up in the weights here. But the one thing he's got on his side, he's been freshened up. Last time out, he was on a 7-day backup, and I think he raced a little bit flat. So he could bounce back as next best. But I think Alpha Oro might be the one that bounces back tomorrow.
All right, so Alpha Oro, number one selection there. Not quite the $16 this time around, Quinny?
No, but it's still a nice quote there at $4.60. Heads the market from Ancestry, a $5 chance. Sword of Mercy, $5. Liar, $8 in from $8.50. Sistar, $8. And Ruby Saki's trimmed up at longer odds, $13 into $12. Dino, we've got Alpha Oro on top, and you spoke glowingly about this horse even in defeat after the first up run. You're surprised we're getting as much as $4.60 here. And Ruby Saki has been one that's trimmed up at longer odds. She was a star 12 months ago before a lacklustre spring, but recently at the trials did show that she's still got plenty of ability.
Yeah, she trialled okay. I still want to see her do it race day. You'd want the $4.60 about Alpha Oro because this is nearly like a consolation of the Oakley Plate. It's such a good race. You've got a Group 1 winner in Liar in the race. Sistar ran a record last start at the 9.55 metres. Hummer Hummer getting fitter. So even a horse like Reykjavik can run a cheeky race fresh. So it's a very deep race, but he's top of the pops for me.
Top of the Pops is where we like to be. Rama, what are the numbers, please, for the second leg of the quaddie, the Bell Esprit Stakes?
10, 4, 5, and 1.
10, 4, 5, 1. Let's get to race number 8, the Vobis Gold Sprint over the 1,200 metres. We've got 12 going around, Dino. And number 3, How Womantic for the Mar Eustace Yard with superstar Jamie Carr in the saddle. That's a gear change, effectively, people are telling me, when she's in the saddle. Is favourite at tab.com.au, around about $4.
Yeah, and she's certainly one of the good chances in the race, Daniel. I'm pretty keen here on number 11, Paul's Regret. She has been freshened up. She had a really good summer campaign. She won a couple, was freshened up. She ran a fantastic race, second to Probabile in the Balmain Stakes at this track and distance and got held up for a run. So she should have probably finished closer to Probabile. That's just outstanding form. And then she ran a good race at 1,400 in the Francis Tressidy, but she's been freshened up. She's had a trial. I just think the way this race sets up, you've got How Romantic's drawn one, you've got Sam's Image, Felicia, Yulong January, all on-pace runners, and Paul's Regret probably lands in that group just behind them in that beautiful stalking role, and I think she'll be awfully hard to beat. Felicia's a good mare. We haven't seen her since she trialled about 4 weeks ago, but she trialled very well, and 1,200 at Caulfield has suited her very well in the past. Laverod goes up 6 kilos for his win in the Hariba Stakes at Mornington, but I think they worked out how to ride him back and come with one run, and William Pike stays aboard. And How Romantic's there with a good chance, comes through the same form line, narrowly tipped off by Laverod. Just has a bit of pressure to her outside, but as you said, Jamie Carr aboard's a plus and can run well. But no, I'm quite keen on Paul's Regret.
Righto, Quinny. There's some more value here for Dino. Outside the favourite again. We like that stuff on the Friday form. What have you got for me for Paul's regret, please?
Well, maybe Joey was onto something the other week when he got us to do this show on a Thursday, because yesterday Paul's regret was an $11 chance, has firmed into $7 to be the fourth elect at that quote. How Womantic, a $3.90 market leader out from $3.50. Felicia, $4.40. Laverod, a $5 chance. There's been money for number four, Lord Von Costa, who's been $15 into $9. So a bit of an each-way move there for Lord Von Costa, who comes out of the race, won by Sword of Mercy last start. Obviously, Dino, you can't put them all in the quaddie, but what did you make of the four, Lord Von Costa?
I loved his run and Broadway and fourth. They both ran on really well. The worry for me with Lord Von Costa, I'd love him to have drawn out. He's drawn in, and he's just going to need luck at the right time, and probably Broadway and fourth's in the same boat. She always needs luck getting back, but they're both terrific runs behind Sword of Mercy. They ran the best and the second best last sectionals of the whole meeting, so they're going well. They're just going to have to need luck at the right time.
All right, they're the runners you need to worry about for race number 8, the third leg of the quaddie. Don't even worry about Lord Von Costa. If it's not in the numbers, Quinny, you can't win. That's how things work around here. That's how things work. Rammer, what are those numbers, please?
11, 6, 1, and 3.
11, 6, 1, and 3. We're sort of humming along here. So let's get through the last leg of the quaddie, and then we can focus on a bit of Randwick action after the break. And the Ramaruffi and the Formula Bet. Let's have a look at race number 9, the Vobis Gold Distaff over the 1,400 metres. There is 16 going around. Number 2, No Effort is a scratching, which means Shazard will get a game for the Friedman Yard, Luke Curry in the saddle. But a full field, Dino, to finish it off. And we go down the order a little bit to see that Lunacorn for the Friedman Yard with Jamie Carr in the saddle again is favourite. Fairly open market, $4.60 at tab.com.au.
Yeah, it's a pretty tough finish, Daniel. Open race. I'm going with number 14 here in Good and Proper. I think this mare's having a fantastic preparation. She won a couple, then ran a very good second, and then last start at Bendigo, drew wide, had to go back, and ran very well. Against the pattern of the race, it was won by the leader, the stylist, and ran very well. I think just from a good draw, Daniel Moore can probably have her in the first 5 or 6, and from there, I think she'll run very well to beat I Am Eloquent. Just had a forgetful run at Rose Hill on Golden Slipper Day, was wide, and then got pushed wider and actually hit the line really well. I thought it was a good run. She's got a chance. Lunacorn ran well first up, and then just way below her best last start, but it was a funny race, that race at the Matron Stakes at Flemington. It was the leader tore off in front, led by a big margin, just kept going and not a lot changed. So I'm forgiving of that run. Back in class here also will suit her. Thousand Wishes, she's had her first up run, second up. She's had 4 second up runs for 2 wins, 2 placings. So she does elevate very quickly second up, and she's drawn for a great run with an elite rider in Damien Lane. And 16 Bonds Abroad ran okay at Bendigo last start, and she too is getting fitter. So it's an open finish, but I'm with Good and Proper.
Good and Proper, number 14, is what in the market, Quinny? What sort of price can you get us?
A $6 second elect. Lunacorn has been the market mover, $6 into $4.80. There has been a little bit of support for one of Dino's numbers there, number 8, I'm Eloquent, who's an $11 chance. And the last runner he mentioned, Bonds Abroad, currently $26 if we want to go wide for the exotics. Sorry, Dino, we've left out the third elect here, La Chevalier, who, for mine, it trailed okay recently behind Ruby Saki. But what was your little concern here, currently the $8.50 third elect?
Yeah, I think you were going with okay to middling with that trial, and that's where I'd be as well. She hasn't raced for a long time. She's drawn Norwood Gate. I just think she'd need everything to align to win first up, but no doubting the Mara Eustace stable have them prepared up, that they get horses ready from long breaks a lot. But yeah, I just want to see her have a day at the races.
Not dissimilar with Great Duchess, who did win well at Flemington in June last year, and the recent runs have been good in tougher grade. But is this another one you want to see get back in the winners list before you start entertaining?
If any of the horses I tipped a scratch, she's the one I would elevate. She ran in 2 races that just totally didn't suit her last preparation. So forget that she's got 8-0 next to her name. She's trialled well and she's drawn well. So she's certainly the next in line.
All right. That's the summary of the last leg of the quaddie, race number 9. Rammer, can you please recap those numbers for me?
14, 8, 10, 6, and 16.
All right, that's the legs of the quaddie. Now, you're not going to believe this. There's an SMS here from Terry who said, "Boys, can you help me out? I've been investigating my own level of office stealing. Someone's taken the stapler, and I've had a gutful, and if I don't find it in the next 24 hours, I'm going to start throwing things. But can I please have the numbers for the quaddie again tomorrow at Caulfield?" So we better help Terry out. He's had a poor start to the day.
Okay, for you, Terry, race 6, 7, 1, 2, 10 and 11. Race 7, 10, 4, 5 and 1. Race 8, 11, 6, 1 and 3. And then finally, race 9, 14, 8, 10, 6 and 16.
Can we quickly have a look at Randwick tomorrow for day 2 of the championships? There's 4 group 1s on offer, and we probably should have a bit of a look at those. The Star Australian Oaks is the first one of those. Race number 5 tomorrow at Randwick. We've got 10 going around. And Harmony Rose is the favourite, although this is a good field. You could find the winner out of any of these 10 runners, couldn't you?
It is a good field, Daniel. When you look down amongst them, Impecunious even ran very well last start in the Hungry Heart race in the Vinery. So, and she's a $16 chance. But on with Montefilia. I think a lot of people have probably doubted her staying prowess, but if you look at her run in the VRC Oaks, it was the end of a long preparation, and last week she was only third up, and the horses that beat her home had all had a lot of racing, Explosive Jack and Young Werther, and they were just that little bit match hardened. And I think the 7 day backup is what she wants. In the spring she backed up 7 days after winning the Flight to win the spring champion, and that was a great run. So I'm tipping her to bounce back and win. I'm very wary of the New Zealand filly Amaralina. She is a very good filly. So they're both around the same price, so you could probably back them both, and hopefully one of them wins. Harmony Rose had such a hard run at Rose Hill. If she can back up again, she's an iron filly, and Hungry Heart comes through the same race. So I'm going with Montefilia and Amaralina.
Quinny, market movers there?
Amaralina and Montefilia both $5. Harmony Rose, the $3.40 favourite, Hungry Heart $5, and then double figures, all better the rest.
All right, race 7 is the Sydney Cup, 3,200 metres, of course, a Group 1 affair. We've got 14 going around, a couple of scratchings. Number 4, Quick Thinker, number 6, Shirah, or however you say that, I'm not quite sure. But the favourite at tab.com.au is Favourite Moon, number 10, with Kieran McAvoy in the saddle. Dino knows plenty about two-mile victories.
Yes, he does, and Favourite Moon was very good at his Australian debut. Realm of Flowers through the same form line was very good. Then you've got the form line through the Tancred Stakes, won by Sir Dragonet, and that includes She's Ideal, who drops so much in weight. Southern France did more than enough at that run, and Miami Bound was terrific. Spirit Ridge was okay, so I think any one of those six could win. I'm just going with Southern France. I think you'll get a beautiful run. He's a tough, hardened stayer, and I think the Mar Eustace stable have been very much eyes on the prize, and this is the race for him. So I'm leaning Southern France's way. But as I mentioned, if you're having a quaddie in Sydney, any of those six that are top of the market could win.
Any of them, according to you two, Quinny?
Southern France has firmed 13 into 750, the third elect at that quote. Favourite Moon and Realm of Flowers head the betting there at 550.
Race 8, the Queen Elizabeth Stakes, $4 million up for grabs and 7 runners. I'd like to have a piece of one of these. You're in the cash, whatever happens. So wait for Age Affair over the 2,000 metres. And there's some crackers going around, Dino. Very elegant. Wins a lot, as far as I'm concerned. His favourite at tab.com.au.
Yeah, she's unique. I don't know how she wins, but she does. She looks like a broken shopping trolley sometimes coming up the straight, but she gets the job done. And she might do it again. Her and Adai match motors again for the fourth time. She was very good beating him last time. And you've got to remember last year's Queen Elizabeth, very elegant after the Randvet, went to the 2400 of the Tancred and then came back this year. Just 3 weeks between runs and aims straight at this race. So I'm going with her to win again and beat Adabe. Look, take your pick for the rest. Sir Dragonet was good, but he's got that coming off the Tancred run. Mugatu was sound last week. Moonga was good last week. And Think It Over missed a run last week. And Delasam was great in the Doncaster. It's as you said, you'd like a piece of any of them, but I'd like the biggest piece of Very Elegant.
Quinny?
She's been the market mover, 260 to 240. Adib at 290 second elect, then Sir Dragon at 650, Mugger 2, 750. Just quickly, Dino, do we need just the two for the quaddie? Are you taking it one out, or are you throwing any of the others in as insurance?
I would probably just take the two, I think. Yeah, I think they've had the right preparation.
All right, let's get to the coin of the turf, the last one. We've got 13 going around, Quinny. And number one, Probabil Dino, is the favourite, Kieran McAvoy again.
Yep, and the one to beat back on dry ground, put a line through the All-Star Mile. Before that, she beat Arcadia Queen in the Futurity. Odium will run well. I think getting out the 1,600 metres, they've been aiming up at a race like this, and I think she'll run well. The others, I think probably Nimalee's a really good, got a great racing style about her, hence she's won 6 of 12. I'd probably throw her in the quaddie as well, but a pretty thin leg here.
Quinny?
Best backed runner on the program, probably $3 into $2.50. Odium a $5 chance. We had enough of Colette, Dino?
I think Colette's just a wet tracker, more the point. If she got her preferred ground, she'd be a chance. Graceful Glamour can improve because the track's dry, and I don't know if she can win, but there's a good one for the placings here at 31 and 7 the place, and that's Star L. Had no luck in the Vinery. She could sneak a place at big odds.
All right, so a bit of a summary of Randwick tomorrow. Dino, the formula bet for Caulfield, please. Who are you playing for and what are we selecting?
Trevor Sessions of Wangaratta. And for Trevor, we are having $40 to win race 1, number 2, Mohammedeus. $40 to win race 8, number 11, Paul's Regret. $40 on the all-up of the pair. Race 1, number 2, into race 8, number 11 for Trevor Sessions of Wangaratta.
What's Trev going to get for that, Quinny?
He's going to get $13.30 pre-multiplier, Maha Madeus, $1.90, Paul's Regret, a $7 chance.
All right, and let's get to the Rammer Ruffy.
Ready to sting the bookies? This is Rammer's Ruffy for the all-new Kia Stinger. The perfect balance of power and refinement. Book a thrill ride and experience the new Kia Stinger.
Be rude not to. What are we going with this weekend, Dino?
We're going to break new ground, Daniel. Two-state Rammer Ruffy.
Oh, wow!
Well, it was a bit of a spoiler alert with the Melbourne one, so I thought with race 6, number 7, Tramontana, we've mentioned him, and he's the Melbourne leg. But in Sydney, race 6, the Arrowfield Sprint, do you think Prague's good odds there? I thought he ran really well on the new market, so race 6, number 2, Prague.
One of those again, please, Quinny, for the punters.
Well, we've got Tremontana, who's at $16 in race 7 at Caulfield. And then we come home with Prague, who's an $11 chance up in Sydney.
Nice.
So, sorry, that's race 6, I should say, Tremontana. So the all-up bet comes to a lazy $176 if you want to take the two Rammer Ruffies together.
Advantage. Martin takes the advantage. Swings on goal and kicks it. They're all over him, the Tigers.
Well, that's putting it nicely, JB. Thanks to Channel 7 last night for that audio. But it was a dead set clinic at Marvel Stadium last night as Richmond decided that they would show the world that they are still the one to beat in the AFL. 86-point drubbing of the Saints. Fair questions coming out of their world, I imagine, today. The review might be a pretty hostile one. I wonder if Brent Harvey would like to sit in on that as the AFL Games record holder. He's seen it all in the game and I'm sure gone through a few of those reviews in his time. Boomer, good morning.
And good morning, boys. Yes, no, I don't want to sit in there, to be honest with you. It's not a great place when you're when you've had a bad loss like that and you've got to sit through something and watch yourself, first of all, on the vision from behind the goals, because there is no hiding. Daniel, once upon a time, Roman, when we first started, there was a lot of hiding. You can do whatever you want. Sit in the forward pocket and not chase.
Yes.
By the end of it, if you sat there, the behind the goals vision would get you. And there was no hiding, so it's going to be an interesting week for St Kilda.
As soon as they got the behind-the-goals vision,
it's all over.
The game changed.
It was a game changer, wasn't it?
And then the worst one was when they started filming training. That was bad.
With every angle. Now, we've got three angles at training now at North Melbourne.
Yeah, and I know they do it now.
Behind the goals and... Then they highlight it on a Wednesday afternoon when you're that sore it's not funny that you didn't chase one of the young kids. Yeah. You're like, come on, mate.
Used to do end-to-end drills a lot, so you'd sort of stand around near the point post and just not do a lot, but they're gone those days.
It's funny you say that.
Because, GPS units in there.
That's no good.
For every single session. They have GPSs in for stationary sessions.
That's what?
They do. They go out and have 15 handballs and they have a good GPS on. You can count your six steps that you take. So it's a good question because a lot of people say to me what it was the biggest shift from when you started to when you finished. And I don't often say that, but that is a massive shift, the behind-the-goals vision of AFL football. Yeah.
Huge.
Never thought about it, but just reminded me just then that's a huge change for everybody.
Yeah, no, it was a big change because it wasn't only training, but it was analyst, it was opposition, it was media, like
everything.
Getting access to it to analyse every single moment of every contest, every game.
But that
all
was
over the ground, not just the in frame, that in the TV frame,
so
the whole thing.
Yeah, so the people that don't really can get what it looks like, think of a PlayStation game from elevated above where you can see every player on the field.
Yep.
It's exactly what it's like.
That's when defence in football shifted.
Yes.
Behind it, because you could see your layers.
Yep.
So if it got past that layer, well, what's our next layer?
Yep.
So
were there times when any of you saw something in a review that shocked you, that you didn't realise you had done or that you didn't realise you hadn't done? Or was it always, I've been caught here?
No, you're always learning. You're always learning. And you think you're not lazy, but sometimes when you've had four or five efforts and you just can't go. And when we talk about team defence, they talk about the 18 players on the field. So if you're in the forward pocket at a contest and you don't leave it and the opposition take the ball full length of the ground, it might just be that you're out of place by 30 metres and you think, gee, that's not hard. I could easily get there. So it was a great learning tool, but it was a hard learning tool at the same time.
There were a couple of times when I didn't realise that a player had just run past me because you just don't turn your head. So if you turn your head slightly, you'll see that player go past. That player goes past, he gets the ball, and then it's the chain reaction up the field and what that causes.
So do you then get an opportunity to explain yourself in a review to give a reason, or is it, I don't want to hear about it, I've seen it, bad luck.
You know what the best thing to do is? Yep, fair enough.
Yep.
Put your hand up.
Got that. Yeah,
you argue, it opens up a whole different can of worms.
And the vision doesn't let you argue anyway. Even if you say I've been to five contests, I'm actually can't go. Okay, we should be off the ground then.
Because what happens in the coach's back pocket, if you don't acknowledge that and say, yep, you're right, he might have four or five other examples in there and you'll be horribly embarrassed.
So what would you do, Boomer, with St Kilda? I know that you guys have got your own problems down at North Melbourne, but what's changed at St Kilda from this year to last year, from round one to round five?
So St Kilda are inconsistent for me. I think everybody could put their hand up right now and say that they're inconsistent. What are they? Beat GWS by 8 points. Melbourne beat them by 18. Essendon, 75. Beat West Coast by 20, and then Richmond by 86. So inconsistency to me, if I said why a team's inconsistency, what would you say, Whitey?
Oh, I'd say it's either attitude or personnel.
So youth, I would think youth as well.
Yep.
Where would they rate in, if you did their list, where would they rate right now? Oldest to youngest?
St Kilda?
Yep.
No, they're old.
They're the oldest.
Yeah,
they're the oldest list in the competition right at the minute. But you don't think that because I think straight away inconsistency becomes is youth. Yes, they've got some young players in there, but that's – so it's a tough one. It's a really tough one for me. We don't have to complicate our game too much. Last night, they got belted in clearances. That's it. I think it might have been 20-2 at one stage. Ended up being minus 16 down and minus 31 inside 50s. If you don't win the clearance, you don't go forward. The opposition go forward. So for me, we don't have to complicate the game too much. They got belted inside and Richmond took advantage of that.
I think it's just what we're talking about. It's time to probably embarrass some of those guys with footage and show them what they're actually doing. We spoke, Boomer, earlier this morning about those players are simply leaving the contest before the ball's won.
Yep.
So they're guessing. It's Russian roulette. So they're getting ahead of the contest and going, you win it, but then get it to me so I can finish it.
And you can do that every now and then if you've got one and a half forward coming up to the stoppage and you know a Billings type can go, Roddy, I'm going to play a little bit of Russian roulette here. If you're winning the football and you're on top of the contest. But if you're not on top of the contest, like they haven't been or they weren't last night, you can't do it. You've got to hang around. You've got to help out.
But they're not on top of the contest or they're not on top of their running.
Yeah.
They're not outrunning teams anymore. So I think it, and you said this morning, Harf, it's about now turning this around to go back to hard work. Hard work, you know, roll the sleeves up, get into the contest, play the game differently for a couple of weeks. Yeah, okay, you know how you want to play eventually. But play the game differently in the contest to get your running game going.
No, totally agree. There is a small out, Whitey. They have got seven of their best 22 out. And Hanbury, Gresham, I know they're out for a long time, but Hanbury, Gresham, Geary, who's the captain, Frawley walks in because they needed a tall defender, Zach Jones, Rowan Marshall, and Ryder. They're two ruckmen, and they both play forward. So they have got a small out. but you'd like to think at AFL level.
Not for your effort, though.
Yeah, no, not for your effort. This week. If somebody, if seven go out, seven have got to come in, and yep. their effort needs to be absolutely exactly the same. So I know exactly what you're saying. People will say there's a small out, but if you don't win the clearances for me, it's going to be hard to win the game.
1-300-652-927, Saints fans, they're disappointed last night. Let us know. And Brad Hill's obviously been in the crosshairs for a lot of people in the last couple of weeks. Brett Ratton was talking about him last night. Let's have a listen to the coach.
He was down tonight. It was down. And, you know, Hilly's a proud person and he'll bounce back. But, yeah, at times he had to work harder. And that wasn't just him. So you can't just categorise him because there was a few others in that boat as well.
And I think that last point's important. It wasn't just him, but he is one of the highest paid players on the list and the highest profile as a result of that. He played well last week after a bit of a cook and some coverage in the media boomer and then fell back into old habits last night, it seems, just from watching from afar. What would you do as a leadership player, as a senior player, to try and get him back on track?
It's a tough one because he's such a good player and I think everybody's hard on him because they see what his best is.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
The output is unbelievable when he's up and going. But that also, he's up and going when St Kilda are up and going. He doesn't go and win his own football. He's not an inside mid. So he relies on the guys on the inside, who's the inside
Steel.
Mid? Steel, those type of Severus. Guys to win Death the football crouch. And get it out to him. So when St Kilda are going well, he's outside getting the ball, bouncing the ball up the field. When St Kilda are not doing that and they're getting belted in the clearances, those outside players are easier to tag or not. And he didn't get tagged, but they're easier to negate, so to speak. So he's a byproduct of what happens on the inside, so you can't just blame him.
And to emphasise that point, when you look at his last 3 weeks against Essendon, he had 16 disposals. Against West Coast, 26 disposals. So that was only last week.
Yep.
And then 10 last night. So it's almost like, as you're saying, if St Kilda's going well on the inside, he's going to be going pretty well.
Yeah, and they himself. Want to get the football to him because he's a great user. He penetrates the game, breaks lines. So they do want to get it. You're not winning the ball. Like I mentioned, those clearances. If they don't win it inside, he doesn't get it.
But a holistic view of his year and a half at St Kilda, I still don't think he's been the player that St Kilda thought he'd be. Well,
the thing is, Whitey, when you come over with expectations and put your hand up and say, this is how much I want, there's expectations on you to perform, and you need to do that. As a senior player now, as a premiership player, he needs to bring that leadership, and when he's not doing it, it stands out a little bit more than a young guy not doing it.
Brad generates his ball through run.
Yep.
Through run
which
contest.
Which is work rate.
Yep, which is work rate. And that's where he doubles up possession, so kicks it, gets to the next one. He outruns. That's his one wood.
But you do see games now where wingmen, particularly if they're on the wrong side, that they are working as hard as but they can't get the ball because it's not on their side.
No, he's different because he's got a license to go anywhere he wants. Whereas Camden McIntosh, for Richmond, for example, he's one wing. That's it. He does probably the most unrewarded running of any player in the competition. Brad Hill's allowed to go anywhere.
I'd love to play. If I was coming back as a player, I'd love to play on the wing.
Nah.
Would you?
Yeah, no, because that's
which
stoppages.
Wing?
Well, Brad Hill's wing.
not McIntosh's wing.
You go to one side of the stoppage as a defence. This is why Andrew Gaff gets so much of the ball. They tag him, but they won't do nothing around their setups. So he goes defensive cover. His opposition player goes defensive cover. West Coast win it, feed it back. Gaff gets another touch. That's the wing's a great spot when you're up and running.
Well,
Ruckman's winning.
Not putting it past you, Boomer. I reckon there's a spot for you. We'll do something about that, I reckon. We can fix that up for you here in the Breakfast Club. What about the Tigers? While we're talking about last night's game, I mean, it was emphatic. Jack's kicked five. The defence played really well. Nathan Broad's playing well, I reckon. He's a good player.
Underrated. Yeah. He reminds me a lot of Ben Stratton when Hawthorn were going really well.
He's a beauty. You mentioned Camden McIntosh was back in the team last night and had a big impact. Their contest work, Edwards, my
Jack
man.
Jack Graham,
we spoke about before. Cochin had some really big
Lambert had a good game last night.
And then Dusty does his thing sort of forward mid as well. It's sort of hard to predict what happens too far down the track, but are they right in the running again from what you've seen, Boomer?
At the start of the year, I thought they've got to drop off. And in what I've seen, and then last night, no, they're not going to drop off. They're right in the mix. Absolutely they are. I just don't understand why teams keep giving a spare to them. I just don't. It's happened for 5 years now. It just keeps happening. Last night, I was watching the telly, and the ball goes in. There's just one Richmond player marked the ball on his chest. I'm just thinking, how? Why? And I'm not a coach, and it's probably why, but I just, Richmond, just play them one-on-one and do not give a spare. You can't have your fifth coming into a contest and leaving Grimes, Vlosten, I know he's not there, but all those players just marking the ball in their chest. That's where they start their run.
There's one last night, stopping on centre wing, broadcast side, and you could see in the field of view of the camera that Richmond had released their defender, extra defender sitting back and just top of the D50, which means Kilda got a number somewhere.
Can I cut you off?
Yep.
How do they release a defender?
Well, now I imagine one of those Saints players must have pushed
up. Yeah, yep. Exactly.
So they've released, they're happy to hold their six back behind the ball, which means the Saints have got an extra number somewhere.
At the contest.
At the contest, correct. But so they don't drop one back, they bring it up to the contest and try and outnumber at the contest. But Richmond inevitably win the footy, and then they run straight through the secure defence and get a goal. It was a goal square handball to Lynch, it might have been. And it's just it's an open goal. They had a free run inside forward 50, so effectively Lynch was free inside forward 50 because secure had pushed up too high from behind the contest. Like, it was a debacle from a strategic perspective last
night. And you can have one at stoppage. But if you're not winning the stoppage, like they didn't last night, the clearance, you're playing one short on the field.
But it goes back to the Hawthorn days where they almost let the opposition win the stoppage, and they just sit back and they will just kick it to us, and then we'll control it from there.
Because
it was Geelong too.
Yeah, Geelong did
the Bartell era.
Absolutely.
The game for a long time has been played on turnover. Like, scores from turnover are
huge.
That's where you win.
Yeah, that's where you win the game. So Richmond have worked it out. Vlosten will come back into the team. He's one of the best interceptors. But you look, one of the players that's underrated, that needs to be sat on for Richmond, is Jaden Short. Week in, week out, he sits back, okay? So they create the extra in their defence. Short then comes off his man, so Richmond win the ball. Short then wins, then gets the ball through handball receive. And he's a beautiful kick of the ball. Beautiful kick. So,
and they love getting the ball into his hand, and Hooley, obviously, as well. They just give the football.
The thing with short too is he's a long kick.
Long kick. That's the difference.
Yeah.
Short, long.
So with 21-1, second and third quarters, 21-1 with the clearance numbers. Here, so it's probably one of the reasons why St Kilda were bringing that extra number up to try and do something about it. But
then you're playing into the hands.
I reckon after 10-0, you might start to worry about that too.
That's unheard of.
No,
that is absolutely unheard of.
Left field.
But this is the thing, though, isn't it? That at quarter time, St Kilda was in front narrowly.
Yeah.
Early stages of the second quarter, the game trend hadn't changed. But from that burst in the second quarter where Richmond put three or four goals on, it was more the fact that St Kilda couldn't respond. And I just wonder how much of it had to do with the fact that they had the five-day break. Because it would have taken them a fair bit to get back into the game against West Coast. And there was a fair bit of emotion attached to the way. No, I understand that, but you're trying to find a reason for such a capitulation. That was a dramatic capitulation.
Well, that would be, you could investigate that thoroughly, I reckon, if it was a one-off. But we've seen it twice in 3 weeks,
two
and a half times in 3 weeks. So there's some underlying problems there at the Saints at the moment, clearly. Off the SMS, some feedback coming through the morning. Someone needs to tell Brad Hill he doesn't need to be COVID-safe with physical distancing when he's on the footy field, trying to repay his salary. There's one. It's fairly straight to the point. And then this one, St Kilda. Insipid, gutless. Self-centred bunch of wannabes. Almost 80 years following this club. That might be the worst I've seen. It's fairly strong as well, off the SMS. Damien Hardwick was talking after the Tigers' win. Let's have a listen to the coach.
I thought our pressure was very good. We did prep our players at St Kilda's. You know, the quarter and a half they played against West Coast was some of the best footy you've seen played this year. So we knew we were up for a fight. But we know when we play our best, our pressure is high, our system is good, and it looked that way evident early. I thought we gave away a couple of goals in that first quarter we probably shouldn't have. A couple of contested situations behind the ball weren't ideally great, but the guys got better as the game went on. So, some real positives for us tonight.
Pretty happy coach after a pretty strong performance. Damien Hardwick there, the Tigers going nicely at the moment. I just want to change tack for a second. We were discussing yesterday, Boomer and Rammer, with Brad Johnson about the comments from Nick Riewoldt about the concussion situation and on the back of the Chelsea Randall outcome where she decided to not put her hand up to play this week after being concussed and adhering to the 12-day protocols. Rui was talking that if it was him, and it was a prelim final and the 12-day protocol meant he would miss the grand final, Boomer, that he'd do anything he could to make that change. If he's feeling okay, not stretch it off and all that sort of stuff. If he's feeling okay, that he'd do anything he could to the point where he'd try and get an injunction in the Supreme Court. What was your take on that? What would you do in a similar situation? If you were Chelsea Randall this week, Boomer, What would you do?
So who made that comment? Jack or Nick?
Nick
Rewa. I can absolutely see where he's coming from. So I've been knocked out a couple of times playing footy back in the day, and you play the next week.
Yep.
I actually come on in that quarter. but that there was no protocols then. It was just, are you okay? Yep, I'm,
yeah,
okay.
I'm okay.
And you come back on.
Yep.
It's a really tough one, Half, because I understand and I work with Lee Adams, who finished his career through the concussion protocols. And I was speaking to him about it the other day, and he said he can absolutely see where they're coming from with it. He thinks it's a great rule, the 12 days. We had Curtis Taylor at Kangaroos. We had 2 6-day breaks. We had to miss two games.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
midway through the first week, he actually felt as good as gold. And he said, I could play this week, not a problem at all. But it's a really tough one for me. I haven't been concussed too many times, so I understand how we want to look after people in general and later on in life.
But isn't that the point? It's not necessarily about the here and now. It's about,
yes, absolutely,
having on people's lives.
Absolutely. But if this is a one-off case and you've only been concussed once, is that going to have any ramifications down later on in life? And you're missing a grand final for it. Unfortunately, I'm sitting on the fence because I don't want to say something that I would want to play.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.